Imagine a company so indispensable that without its machines, the very fabric of our digital world, I mean, from the smartphone in your hand to the AI powering the next generation of innovation, it just wouldn't exist as we know it. Today, we're taking a deep dive into ASML Holding NV, a Dutch multinational that isn't just, a player in the global semiconductor industry. It's the undisputed linchpin.
That's precisely it. What's truly unique about ASML is that they hold the literal keys to the kingdom for advanced technology. They are foundational, not just peripheral, to every microchip, every digital interaction, and, well, every computing leap we make.
Our mission today is to cut through the incredible complexity of this company and its crucial role. We want to give you a shortcut to being exceptionally well-informed. We'll explore ASML's unique business model, the technological fortress they've built, the powerful market dynamics they navigate, their impressive financial strength, and of course, the significant opportunities and risks that lie ahead.
Yeah, the whole picture.
Think of this as getting to know the invisible giant behind every single microchip. Our sources today are a rich collection of, well, really in-depth investment analyses, market reports, and company insights. It's a treasure trove of information that paints a comprehensive picture of ASML's absolutely irreplaceable role in the world. So let's start at the very beginning. What exactly is ASML, and how did a company founded in the Netherlands back in 1984 become so utterly critical to, well, everything digital we use and rely on?
Okay, so at its heart, ASML is the world's leading, and I'd argue most critical, provider of lithography systems for the semiconductor industry.
Lithography systems. Okay.
And these aren't just any machines, they are staggeringly complex pieces of engineering. They perform the foundational step of printing intricate circuit patterns onto silicon wafers.
Like a tiny, ultra-precise printing press for chips.
Exactly like that, but at an almost unimaginable scale of precision. This process is absolutely fundamental to the mass production of integrated circuits, what we commonly call microchips. And, without ASML's most advanced systems, the production of leading-edge semiconductors, those tiny brains for AI, high-performance computing, or advanced smartphones, it would simply be impossible. It
Wow.
truly is a structural choke point in the global technology supply chain.
And it's more than just enabling chip production, isn't it? I mean, they're also directly responsible for making chips better, for continually pushing that boundary we hear about, Moore's Law.
Absolutely. ASML, in a very real sense, is the ultimate enabler of Moore's Law. That famous observation, that the number of transistors on a microchip roughly doubles every 2 years or so. They provide the chip makers, we're talking giants like TSMC, Samsung, Intel, with the tools they need to continue making chips that are smaller, faster, more power efficient, and ultimately more cost effective.
But how do they stay so far ahead?
Well, what truly sets ASML apart, I think, is their deeply collaborative model. They work years in advance with their customers, actually co-developing the technology required for future manufacturing nodes.
Nodes like 7 millimeter, 5 millimeter, those numbers we hear.
Exactly. Those nodes, 7 millimeters, 5 millimeters, 3 millimeters, and beyond, they essentially represent generations of chip technology. Smaller numbers mean denser, more powerful, more efficient chips. And this isn't just a simple supplier-customer relationship, it's a strategic partnership. They're deeply embedded in the innovation pipeline of the entire industry.
It sounds less like they're just selling you the oven and more like they're inventing new baking recipes with you for the next decade.
That's a great analogy, yeah. That level of integration is incredibly powerful and locks them in.
Okay, let's delve into ASML's business model then. You said it's not a one-trick pony. How do they actually generate revenue?
So their revenue streams are primarily split two ways. First, there's net system sales. That's the sale of their new and sometimes used lithography
The
machines.
big ticket items.
The very big ticket items, yes. And then there's installed base management, or IBM. This covers the essential servicing and upgrading of the thousands of ASML machines already operating in customer fabs, factories around the world.
Okay, so selling the machines and then keeping them running and updated.
Exactly. And to give you some context, in the second quarter of 2025, net system sales accounted for about 73% of their total net sales. That was roughly 5.6 billion.
Wow.
Installed base management, the service side, contributed the remaining 27%, or about 2.1 billion, bringing their total net sales for that quarter to 7.7 billion.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Extreme ultraviolet lithography, or EUV. This isn't just advanced tech, it's a technological marvel where ASML holds a complete 100% monopoly. How is that even possible? Why are they the only ones?
Yeah, EUV is really the pinnacle of lithography. It uses an extremely short wavelength of light, just 13.5 nanometers, to print the absolute finest, most complex patterns required for those latest semiconductor nodes, the 7mm, 5mm, 3mm, and even stuff coming next.
Right.
And ASML's 100% monopoly, it didn't happen by accident, not at all. It's the result of a multi-decade, incredibly high-risk R&D effort. We're talking well over $10 billion invested.
$10 billion.
At least. Their former competitors, big names like Canon and Nikon, they simply couldn't overcome the immense technical and financial hurdles. They had to abandon their EUV research programs years ago. It was just too hard, too expensive.
So ASML was the only one left standing after this massive R&D war.
Pretty much. And this segment isn't just crucial for the most advanced chips. It's also the fastest growing part of the lithography market. It's projected to grow at something like a 12% compound annual growth rate from 2024 to 2029. That growth is driven by this relentless demand for more advanced chip manufacturing.
And it's a huge part of their sales now.
Oh, yeah. In Q2 2025, EUV systems alone represented 48% of ASML's net system sales, almost half.
But EUV isn't the whole story, is it? There's still this other technology, deep ultraviolet lithography, DUV. Many might assume EUV makes DUV obsolete, but you're saying that's a misconception.
That's a really critical point, and yes, it's a common misconception. DUV is a more mature technology, absolutely, but it remains completely indispensable.
How so?
Well, it's used to pattern a wide variety of semiconductor layers across both leading-edge and older legacy chip nodes. ASML's DUV portfolio is quite diverse. It includes systems like argon fluoride immersion or RFI.
RFI.
And that RFI technology actually accounted for a significant 43% of their net system sales in Q2 2025. So DUV overall hold a dominant 61% share of the total lithography equipment market. It's still the workhorse.
So they don't compete EUV and DUV, they work together.
Exactly. They have a symbiotic relationship. Think about it. EUV machines are immensely costly, often over $200 million each.
$200 million for one machine.
Yeah. So economically, they're only used for a handful of the most critical, finest detail layers on an advanced chip. Maybe, you know, 5 to 10 layers out of dozens.
Okay.
The majority of the, let's say, 50 or 60 or even more layers on that same advanced chip are patterned using more cost-effective DUV systems.
Ah, I see.
So as the production of advanced chips increases, the demand for complementary DUV tools also rises. It's an enduring and really robust revenue stream for ASML, far from obsolete.
And this brings us to their other crucial revenue stream, that installed base management IBM. You mentioned it provides a constant stream of high-margin revenue. That sounds like an incredible stabilizer, especially in a cyclical industry like semiconductors.
It absolutely is. This segment, IBM, involves providing service, software updates, hardware upgrades, basically keeping those thousands of ASML machines running optimally all over the world.
Makes sense. These machines are too valuable to just let sit.
Exactly. In Q2 2025, IBM sales were $2.1 billion, representing that 27% of total revenue. And management expects this segment to grow by more than 20% in 2025 compared to 2024. That's significantly faster than the overall market growth.
Wow, 20% growth in services.
Yeah. The long-term service contracts and the necessary upgrades associated with each machine create essentially a multi-decade annuity stream. This recurring high-margin revenue doesn't just smooth out earnings volatility, it acts as a strategic shield.
A shield?
It allows ASML to keep investing aggressively in R&D, maintain its technological lead, even during the semiconductor industry's inevitable cyclical downturns. It's a luxury, frankly, that few competitors can afford. That stability is key.
So who are these vital customers benefiting from all this ASML technology? And where in the world are these incredible machines actually being shipped?
Well, ASML's customer base is highly concentrated. A substantial majority of their revenue, especially for the high-end EUV systems, comes from a very small number of the world's largest semiconductor manufacturers. We're talking primarily TSMC, Samsung, and Intel.
The big three.
The big three, exactly. Now, while this concentration might look like a risk on paper,
yeah, I was thinking that.
It's actually a direct consequence of that deeply collaborative R&D model we talked about. These companies aren't just buyers, they're partners in advancing the technology. That fosters a uniquely strong, almost symbiotic relationship.
Okay, so the concentration risk is offset by the partnership strength.
Mm-hmm.
What about geography? Where do the machines go?
Geographically, sales are predominantly concentrated in Asia. That's the global hub of semiconductor manufacturing.
Right. Taiwan, South Korea.
Exactly. But the regional mix can be quite variable from quarter to quarter. It's due to the lumpy nature of these huge multi-million dollar equipment deliveries.
Lumpy.
Yeah. For example, in Q2 2025, Taiwan led with 35% of system sales. China was next at 27%, and South Korea had 19%. But contrast that sharply with the full year 2024. China was the largest region at a record 41%.
41%, that's huge.
It is. And it's a shift we'll definitely need to revisit later because it's tied into those geopolitical factors.
Okay. And the end markets. What kinds of chips are these machines mostly making?
In Q2 2025, it was dominated by logic chips think processors, especially for things like AI that was 69% of system sales.
Mm.
Memory chips like DRAM and NAND flash made up the remaining 31%.
So the chips we all rely on are being manufactured in just a handful of regions, primarily Asia, using equipment from this one single critical source, ASML.
Mm-hmm. And just to put some concrete numbers from Q2 2025 on that, total net sales, $7.7 billion. System sales were $5.6 billion of that. Within systems, EUV brought in $2.7 billion. And those crucial RFID EUV systems, $2.4 billion. And logic chips drove nearly $3.9 billion of those system sales. It really shows the focus on advanced computing.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit. ASML operates within this truly colossal, but also, as you mentioned, notoriously cyclical industry, the semiconductor manufacturing equipment market. It's not just part of the digital world. It's really the engine room that builds it.
Indeed it is. And the scale is massive. This market was valued at approximately $111 billion back in 2023.
Wow.
But the trajectory ahead looks remarkably strong. Projections indicate it could reach something like $270.4 billion by 2032. That's a compound annual growth rate of over 10%.
Huge growth.
Huge growth. Even in the near term, industry forecasts are suggesting record sales may be $125.5 billion in 2025, climbing further to $138.1 billion in 2026. And this is all part of the broader expectation that the total semiconductor market itself, you know, the chips, will surpass $1 trillion in revenue by 2030.
$1 trillion. What powerful forces are propelling this massive expansion? It can't just be smartphones and PCs anymore, can it?
No, not entirely. It's really a confluence of powerful secular megatrends. The most significant one right now, artificial intelligence. The explosive growth of AI is fueling unprecedented capital spending on data center infrastructure. They all need the most advanced chips.
Right. The AI boom needs the hardware.
Exactly. Beyond AI, you still have the continued rollout of 5G networks, the pervasive growth of the Internet of Things, IoT, connecting everything, and also the increasing amount of semiconductor content in cars. Think electrification, autonomous driving features.
More chips in cars than ever before.
Way more. These are all robust, long-term tailwinds. But, and it's a big work, but despite the strong long-term growth, the industry is famously cyclical.
Right, the boom and bust cycle.
Exactly. You get these periods of intense capital investment and capacity expansion, often followed by downturns with inventory corrections and reduced equipment spending. The 2023-2024 period, for instance, has been widely called a transition year or a market downturn.
Which raises that important question you touched on. How does ASML, even with its unique position, manage to navigate these industry-wide waves? Their backlog helps, the service revenue helps.
Yeah.
But they're still exposed, right?
They absolutely are exposed. The backlog and IBM provide a buffer, a cushion, but the core business of selling new machines is inherently tied to their customer spending plans, which follow these cycles.
Okay, let's dive deeper into ASML's specific niche within that huge market, the lithography market itself. This is where the magic of printing circuits really happens, you said, the heart of chip manufacturing.
Right. So the lithography equipment segment, it's a critical subset of the overall equipment market. It was estimated to be worth around $28.4 billion in 2025. Projections see it growing to maybe $40.6 billion by 2030. That's a CAGR of about 7.4%.
And the driver is just making smaller, better chips.
Primarily, yes. The main driver is that relentless migration to more advanced manufacturing nodes from 5 millimeters down to 3 millimeters, then 2 millimeters, and whatever comes next. And there's this fascinating phenomenon here called litho intensity.
Litho intensity, what's that?
As chip designs get more complex and transistors shrink, the number of lithography steps needed to produce a single wafer actually increases.
So you need more prints for each wafer.
Exactly. So demand for lithography tools can actually grow faster than the overall growth in wafer production because each wafer becomes more valuable and much more complex to manufacture.
And that must disproportionately benefit ASML.
It absolutely does. Because the most litho-intensive steps, the ones needing the absolute highest precision, naturally require their most advanced and highest margin EUV and immersion DUV systems. So the inherent complexity of modern shipmaking directly fuels ASML's growth. It's baked into the physics.
Now, beyond just these market trends, the semiconductor supply chain has undeniably become a geopolitical hotbed. You mentioned it earlier. It seems to be leading to some massive shifts in how and where chips are being made globally.
Absolutely. That's a huge factor now. In response to the supply chain vulnerabilities we all saw during the pandemic, and also because of rising geopolitical tensions, governments have stepped in big time.
Like the CHIPS Act in the U.S.
Exactly. The U.S. ChipCity programs, designed to encourage domestic semiconductor manufacturing,
right,
bringing chipmaking home, or at least diversifying it.
So more fabs being built outside of Asia?
That's the result. We're seeing a global wave of new fab construction. It's significantly expanding the geographic footprint of chip production beyond its traditional concentration in Asia, particularly Taiwan and South Korea. The U.S., for example, is projected to increase its fab capacity by something like 203% between 2022 and 2032.
Wow. That must be good news for ASML, right? Mm-hmm. More factories needing their machines.
It is a significant tailwind, yes. This global diversification, even if it's not purely efficient from a strictly economic viewpoint, means multiple fabs are being built to serve demand that might previously have been met by a single larger facility. More customers, more locations needing equipment.
And then there's the other side of that geopolitical coin,
mm-hmm,
the export controls you mentioned, which directly impact ASML, especially regarding China.
Yes, that's the challenging side. The strategic importance of semiconductors has truly led to what some call the weaponization of trade policy.
Strong words.
Well, the U.S. government, working with allies like the Netherlands, where ASML is based, and Japan, has implemented really stringent export controls. The goal is to restrict China's access to the most advanced semiconductor technology and the equipment needed to make it.
And ASML is right in the crosshairs.
Directly. These regulations directly impact ASML, and they're fundamentally reshaping global equipment and ship trade flows. This whole dynamic introduces significant uncertainty and risk. It's created some complex financial situations for ASML recently, which we definitely need to explore more.
So the implication for you, the listener, is that the very foundation of our digital lives, the chips that power everything, is now deeply intertwined with international relations, government policies, national security concerns.
Mm-hmm. The chips are no longer just an economic commodity. They're a strategic asset, constantly subject to these powerful global currents.
We've talked about ASML's 100% monopoly in EUV, but let's really try to unpack why it's a monopoly.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't just a market lead. You called it a technological fortress. It seems almost unimaginable in its complexity and cost.
That really is the perfect way to frame it. ASML is the only company capable of building these EUV lithography systems, and those systems are absolutely essential for manufacturing chips at the 7-nanometer node and below the cutting edge.
And it wasn't luck.
Not at all. It wasn't some market accident.
Yeah.
It's the culmination of that multi-decade, incredibly high-risk R&D effort we mentioned, costing well over $10 billion. Their primary competitors, names like Canon and Nikon, who were once giants in lithography, they just couldn't keep pace. They eventually had to abandon their EUV programs entirely.
So paint a picture for us. What makes EUV so staggeringly complex,
right,
that these other major players just had to throw in the towel? It can't just be the money, can it?
It's the physics as much as the money. The technological complexity of EUV is truly staggering. It feels like operating at the very limits of what's possible.
Okay.
Imagine this. The process involves firing incredibly high-power lasers at microscopic droplets of molten tin, 50,000 times per second.
50,000 times a second.
Yes, in a perfect vacuum. This incredibly precise action creates a plasma that emits the specific 13.5-nanometer EUV light they need.
Okay, that sounds hard enough.
But here's the crucial challenge. That EUV light, it gets absorbed by virtually all matter. Air absorbs it. Traditional glass lenses absorb it.
So you can't use lenses like in a camera?
Nope. The entire system has to operate in a near-perfect vacuum. And instead of lenses, it uses a series of hyper-precise, multi-layered mirrors. These mirrors are often described as the flattest surfaces ever manufactured by humans.
The flattest surfaces ever made.
To direct and focus that extremely delicate light onto the silicon wafer. The sheer scientific and engineering achievement here, just making that work reliably, represents an almost insurmountable barrier to entry for any potential competitor. Certainly in the foreseeable future, it's a genuine marvel of human ingenuity.
Wow. Okay. Even in the older DUV market, where you said competition exists from Canon and Nikon, ASML still holds a commanding lead, especially in the most advanced segments. How do they maintain that edge there? Is it just momentum?
It's more than momentum. While Canon and Nikon do compete, mainly in older KrF and i-line DUV systems used for, let's say, less critical layers or older chip designs, ASML is the undisputed market leader in advanced DUV, specifically RRF immersion lithography.
That RFI tech again.
Right. ASML often commands something like a 90% market share in this high-end DUV segment.
90%. So how? What's their advantage there?
Their key proprietary advantage in DUV is something called the twin-scan dual-stage architecture.
Twin-scan, two stages.
Exactly. It's an innovative design that allows them to measure and align one wafer on one stage while a second wafer is simultaneously being exposed, having the pattern printed, on another stage.
Ah, parallel processing.
Precisely. This parallel processing capability results in significantly higher throughput, meaning more wafers processed per hour compared to the single-stage designs used by their competitors.
And that means money for the chip makers.
Directly. For high-volume manufacturers like TSMC or Samsung, that superior productivity translates to a lower total cost of ownership per wafer, even if ASML's initial machine price tag is higher. It's an economic moat built on sheer efficiency and performance. They make chips faster and cheaper in the long run.
So it sounds like ASML isn't dominant because of just one thing. Like EUV, they're protected by a series of powerful, mutually reinforcing economic moats. It really is like a layered defense system.
That's a perfect analogy, layered defense. First, you have those immense technological barriers and the sheer scale of their R&D. The capital required, the decades of accumulated knowledge, it's prohibitive. A single next-gen high-NA EUV system costs around $300
million. $300
million. And ASML invests over $4 billion annually in R&D just to stay ahead. That's hurdle number one.
Okay, what's layer two?
Layer two is their deeply integrated ecosystem. It's more than just the machine. They have exclusive, deeply integrated partnerships with sole source suppliers. Think of the German optics specialist, Zeiss, absolutely vital for those hyper-precise EUV mirrors. Nobody else makes them like that.
So a locked-in supply chain.
And crucially, remember, their largest customers, Intel, TSMC, Samsung, they were actually co-investors in the original EUV development years ago.
Ah, so they helped fund the thing they now rely on.
Exactly. A new entrant wouldn't just need to replicate the technology. They'd need to somehow replicate this entire intricate web of supply chain and customer relationships. It's a near impossible task to build that from scratch.
Okay, tech barriers, ecosystem, what else?
Layer three. Incredibly high customer switching costs. Semiconductor fabs are meticulously designed around the footprint, the utilities, the processes of specific equipment. Replacing a lithography vendor, especially ASML, would cost a chipmaker billions of dollars and cause years of production delays and yield problems.
So once you design your multi-billion dollar fab around ASML, you're kind of stuck.
You're very much locked in. That deep integration creates powerful customer lock-in. And finally, layer four. A vast intellectual property portfolio. They hold over 5,000 patents related to EUV alone. That's a significant legal barrier to anyone trying to copy them.
Okay, that is a formidable fortress.
Mm.
But even with such strong moats, innovation never sleeps. Are there any competitive threats, even on the distant horizon, that ASML needs to keep a close eye on? Anything that could challenge this dominance?
Well, the primary, albeit still quite distant, competitive threat comes from an alternative technology called nanoimprint lithography, or NIL. Canon is the main company developing this.
Nanoimprint, like a stamp.
Exactly. In 2024, Canon announced their FPA-1200 NZ2C NIL system. Unlike ASML's light-based lithography, NIL works more like a high-precision stamp, physically imprinting patterns onto the wafer surface.
Interesting. What are the claimed advantages?
Canon claims this technology can produce patterns suitable for 5 millimeters and even 2 millimeter nodes, but at a significantly lower cost, maybe up to 90% less power consumption than an EUV system, and potentially a lower machine cost, too.
Lower cost, less power? Sounds compelling. What's the catch?
The catch is that NIL has faced long-standing, persistent challenges with defectivity, tiny errors in the stamping process, and also overlay alignment, making sure each stamped layer lines up perfectly with the previous one. These are absolutely critical for high-volume, high-yield manufacturing of complex chips.
So it might work in a lab, but scaling it up is the problem.
That seems to be the challenge. For now, NIL is viewed mostly as a long-term, relatively low-probability threat to ASML's core markets, especially in leading-edge logic where performance and timed market are paramount.
Right. The Intels and TSMCs aren't likely to switch soon.
Exactly. They are deeply committed to their proven EUV roadmaps. NIL might eventually find a niche role, perhaps in more cost-sensitive markets like memory chips or maybe some specialty devices, but it's not seen as disrupting ASML's dominance in the highest value segments anytime soon. Still, ASML certainly watches it closely.
Okay, let's turn to the numbers. Because ASML's financial performance over the last decade, it hasn't just been good. It's been nothing short of remarkable. It really tells a story of incredible growth and profitability that stands out.
It truly has been an exceptional trajectory. If you look at their total net sales, they grew from about $6.3 billion back in 2015 to a substantial $28.3 billion in 2024.
Wow, more than quadrupled.
Yeah, that represents an 18.2% compound annual growth rate, the CAGR, over nearly a decade. That is phenomenal for a company operating at this scale in a capital-intensive industry.
What drove that incredible growth?
Primarily, it was the successful commercialization of EUV technology hitting high volume, combined with the sustained demand for their advanced EUV systems. Both engines were firing.
And what's particularly interesting, as you mentioned, is how they seem to navigate those industry cycles.
Mm-hmm.
2023 was a downturn year for the broader market, right? But ASML grew.
They did. They managed to achieve 30% revenue growth in 2023, which was quite countercyclical. This was possible because they had this massive order backlog built up from prior boom years.
Ah, the backlog buffer.
Exactly. That backlog is critical. It provides a degree of revenue visibility and stability that's quite unique in the equipment sector. It allowed them to keep shipping systems based on old orders, even when new orders slowed down globally.
So that backlog smooths out the bumps.
To a significant extent, yes. Now, following that strong 2023, 2024 was widely called that transition year for the industry, and ASML's revenue growth did moderate, down to 2.6% as the market began a slow recovery.
Still positive growth in a transition year, though.
Still positive, yes. And if you look at their 10-year financial summary, it highlights this consistent expansion across the board. Gross profit grew at nearly 20% CAGR, operating income at 23% CAGR, net income over 20%, diluted earnings per share over 21% CAGR.
Those aren't just dry statistics. They really tell a compelling story of consistent, powerful expansion across every part of their operations. It showcases their market strength and, frankly, excellent operational execution. Beyond just growing the top line, the sales, ASML boasts profitability metrics that are genuinely best in class. They set them apart from many companies, even within the high-flying tech sector. What's driving that impressive profitability?
Well, look at their gross margins. They've steadily expanded over the years, breaking the 50% barrier recently and stabilizing at a very healthy 51.3% in both 2023 and 2024.
50% gross margin on hardware that complex is amazing.
It is. And this improvement is driven by that favorable product mix, selling more of the high margin installed base management business, the services side.
Right. Services usually have good margins.
They do. And management is confident this trend will continue. Their long-term guidance is for gross margins to reach somewhere between 56% and 60% by 2030.
Wow, even higher. What about operating margins?
Also strong expansion there. Operating margins grew from about 22.3% in 2015 to 31.9% in 2024. This shows strong operating leverage.
Meaning
that as their revenue base has grown significantly, their operating expenses like R&D, sales, general administrative costs, they've grown at a slower rate. So more of each sales dollar falls directly to the bottom line as profit.
Efficient scaling.
Very efficient scaling. And their returns on capital also demonstrate this exceptional capital efficiency. Their return on equity, ROE, was 58.3% recently. That's remarkably high. It indicates the company generates substantial profit from the capital invested by its shareholders.
Okay, so strong growth, expanding margins, great returns. It sounds like this company is just a cash-generating machine, though you mentioned the numbers can look a bit bumpy sometimes quarter to quarter.
It is indeed a prodigious free cash flow generator. And you're right about the quarterly volatility. Their free cash flow can exhibit pretty significant fluctuations.
Why is that?
It's mainly due to working capital movements tied to the production and delivery of these multi-million dollar systems. Revenue often gets recognized upon shipment or final acceptance by the customer, and that can lead to large swings in things like accounts receivable and deferred revenue, depending on timing.
Give me an example.
Sure. In the first half of 2025, for instance, they actually generated a negative free cash flow of $475 million in Q1. But then it swung back to a positive $319 million in Q2.
Okay, so you can't just look at one quarter.
Exactly. It's crucial to look beyond that quarterly lumpiness. The underlying cash generation capability of the business, viewed over a full-year cycle, is exceptionally robust. It reflects the company's fundamental profitability and that pricing power we talked about.
Now, when you stack ASML up against its top competitors in the semiconductor equipment space, companies like Applied Materials, Lam Research, KLA, its superior financial profile really shines through, doesn't it? What truly sets them apart financially?
The difference is stark, yeah, and it really boils down to that unique market control. When we look at peers like Applied Materials, AMAT, Lam Research, LRCX, KLA Corp, KLAC, those companies operate in important but much more fragmented and competitive segments like etch or deposition or process control.
More players fighting for market share.
Exactly. ASML, however, with its EUV business, holds that pure, unassailable monopoly. In high-end DUV, it's near monopoly status. This affords them a pricing power that competitors in more fragmented segments simply lack.
They set the price for the most critical step.
Pretty much. They aren't just selling equipment. They're providing that indispensable technology gateway, that toll road that any company wanting to produce leading-edge chips must use. And the market recognizes this.
How does the market recognize it?
It values this unique business model more highly. It prices ASML less like a standard equipment manufacturer and more like a unique technology infrastructure provider. Investors appreciate the unparalleled market control and consequently the superior and more predictable long-term profitability.
Can you see that in the numbers compared to peers?
Absolutely. Look at the 2024 figures again. ASML's gross margin was 51.3%. Compare that to Applied Materials at 47.5% or Lam Research at 47.3%. Clearly higher. Their return on equity of 54.9% also generally outpaces most peers, highlighting that exceptional capital efficiency that stems directly from their dominant market position.
Okay, the 2023-2024 period for ASML seems to have been significantly shaped by two major themes. The first is a really complex and defining one, that geopolitical landscape, specifically concerning China.
Yes, this has undeniably been the most significant external factor impacting ASML lately. We've seen this tightening of export controls, primarily driven by the U.S. but implemented with Dutch cooperation, aimed squarely at restricting China's access to advanced semiconductor technology.
These are the rules we heard about.
Exactly. The Dutch government announced new rules in July 2023, and then further clarifications or additions in September 2024. These specifically restricted the export of ASML's most advanced DUV immersion systems, notably the TwinScan NXT.205Zi and NXT.210i class machines to certain Chinese fabs.
And EUV was already off limits to China, right?
Correct. EUV sales to China were already prohibited before these newer DUV restrictions came into effect.
And this led to something you called a pull-forward effect, where Chinese customers basically rushed their orders. What exactly happened there?
That's precisely right. The announcement of these impending controls created this pull-forward dynamic. Chinese customers rushed to acquire as many of these advanced EUV systems as they possibly could before the restrictions fully kicked in.
Trying to beat the deadline.
Exactly. And this surge in demand from China happened to coincide with a period of softening demand in other regions due to the broader market downturn. So ASML was able to reallocate production schedules and fulfill a large portion of its existing backlog for China.
And the result was that huge jump in China's share of sales.
The result was quite dramatic, yes. China's share of ASML's net system sales surged from 29% in 2023 to that record 41% in 2024, a massive temporary spike.
So a huge spike, but clearly, as you said, not sustainable. What are the implications of that falling off for ASML's outlook? It must create a hole.
Precisely. This surge is widely understood, including by ASML management, to be temporary. Management has been very explicit that this level of sales to China is not sustainable. They expect the region's share of revenue to normalize back down to somewhere in the low 20% range in 2025.
That's the big drop.
It creates a significant revenue cliff from a single geography. That revenue gap absolutely must be offset by a recovery in demand from customers in other regions, like Taiwan, South Korea, the U.S., for ASML to achieve overall growth in 2025.
So that explains the wide guidance range for 2025 revenue.
It's a primary reason, yes. That uncertainty around the pace of recovery elsewhere versus the guaranteed drop-off from China contributes heavily to that wide range of $30 billion to $35 billion provided by management for 2025.
And there was some controversy around this, a lawsuit.
Yes. Furthermore, the company's communications surrounding the impact of these controls have drawn scrutiny. It led to a class action lawsuit being filed in late 2024, alleging that ASML misled investors about the potential negative financial impact of these export restrictions.
So it really highlights the tightrope ASML is walking, balancing huge global demand with these increasingly strict international regulations.
It's a very delicate balancing act, absolutely.
Okay, alongside geopolitics, ASML also had to manage the industry's natural cycles, with 2024 being widely dubbed that transition year for the broader semiconductor market.
Yeah.
What did that actually look like for them day to day?
Right. Management consistently characterized 2024 as a transition year for the industry. They anticipated revenue would be roughly flat compared to their strong performance in 2023, and that largely reflected a period of inventory digestion by their customers.
Meaning customers had bought too much earlier and needed to use it up.
Essentially, yes. And there was also caution regarding new capital investments amid broader macroeconomic uncertainty, inflation, interest rates, that sort of thing.
Were there any signs of recovery?
Some positive signs did emerge late in the year. Things like improving inventory levels at customers and rising lithography tool utilization rates, suggesting fabs were getting busier again. But the recovery has been uneven across different end markets. Memory, for example, was slower to recover than logic.
And what about orders? Were they getting new bookings?
That's where we saw highly volatile patterns. Net bookings, which are a key leading indicator of future revenue, they fluctuated dramatically. After a sharp decline in Q3 2024, bookings absolutely surged to a record $9.2 billion in Q4 2023.
A record. In a transition year.
Yeah, but that was largely driven by customers placing very long lead time orders for systems needed in 2025 and beyond, especially for EUV. Then, bookings in Q2 2025 were a solid $5.5 billion, with a strong mix towards logic applications, suggesting continued investment in advanced computing for things like AI.
So that lumpiness again.
Exactly. That lumpiness, while it can be unsettling if you just look at one quarter, it's really a natural feature of a business driven by these enormous multi-million dollar capital equipment sales with long lead times. It highlights the importance of looking beyond a single quarter to the longer term trends and the overall backlog.
And even with the worst of the pandemic era, component shortages hopefully behind us, building these incredibly complex machines must still present significant operational hurdles, right? Keeping the factory running smooth.
Absolutely. The inherent complexity of ASML's supply chain remains a constant operational challenge. It's easy to forget just how intricate it is.
How intricate?
The company relies on a global network of hundreds of specialized suppliers. They provide over 100,000 individual components that go into a single EUV machine.
100,000 parts.
For one machine. So any disruption, whether it's from geopolitical events, a natural disaster, or even just the specific supplier having financial trouble, it poses a potential risk to ASML's production schedules and delivery timelines. It's a logistical marvel that they manage it as well as they do, constantly navigating potential disruptions. It requires incredible coordination and planning.
Okay, despite those near-term headwinds from geopolitics and the industry cycle, ASML's long-term growth outlook seems incredibly strong. It seems driven by a very clear technology roadmap. And the biggest part of that, of course, is the next generation, High-NA EUV.
That's definitely the primary driver for their future growth, yes. High-NA EUV systems, they're designated with the EXE platform name, like the TwinScan EXE.5200B. They represent a major evolutionary leap in lithography technology.
What makes it a leap? What does High-NA actually mean?
High-NA stands for high numerical aperture. These new systems dramatically increase the numerical aperture of the system's optics from 0.33 in current EUV systems up to 0.55.
Okay, and what does that higher number let them do?
It allows them to achieve a much finer resolution down to 8 nanometers, compared to about 13 nanometers for current EUV systems. This essentially enables chipmakers to pattern smaller, denser transistors. Potentially, it allows for up to 2.9 times more density on a chip.
Almost triple the density. That's huge for Moore's Law.
It is. It keeps Moore's Law going. And a key innovation within High-NA is the use of something called anamorphic optics.
Anamorphic?
Yeah.
Like widescreen movies.
Kind of similar concept, yeah. It demagnifies the circuit pattern differently in the horizontal and vertical dimensions. It sounds technical, but the clever part is that this design allows customers to continue using standard size reticles or masks the blueprints for the ship layers.
Ah, so they don't need to change their mask infrastructure.
Exactly. It avoids a hugely costly and disruptive transition for the entire semiconductor ecosystem, which actually deepens customer lock-in with ASML even further. It's a very smart piece of engineering.
So when can we expect these high-NA systems to start making a real impact in actual chip production? Are they out there yet?
Well, the very first high-NA system was actually shipped to Intel's R&D facility out in Oregon in late 2023. It's currently undergoing calibration and integration there, being used to develop their future process nodes beyond what they call Intel 18A.
So in R&D now, when does it hit high volume?
ASML expects high-NA systems to be adopted for high-volume manufacturing, so making chips for sale, in the 2025-2026 timeframe. This is what will enable the industry's roadmap to the 2-nanometer node and whatever comes beyond that for the next decade or so.
And beyond just the technical specs, the smaller features, are there economic benefits for the chip makers too?
Yes, significant ones. By printing these finer features in a single pass, high-NA allows chip makers to simplify their manufacturing flows. They can reduce their reliance on complex, often lower-yielding multi-patterning techniques that they use with current EUV for some layers.
Fewer steps, less chance of errors.
Exactly. This leads to potentially substantial reductions in defects, faster manufacturing cycle times, and ultimately lower overall cost per chip, despite the higher initial cost of the high-NA machine itself. It's really a testament to ASML's sustained high-risk R&D, continually pushing the boundaries of physics to make what seemed impossible just a few years ago seem almost inevitable now.
Okay, beyond high-NA, the growth of artificial intelligence, AI, it isn't just a buzzword for ASML, right? It seems like a massive, tangible driver of demand for their advanced machines.
Oh, absolutely. It's huge. The training and the ongoing operation of these large language models, LLMs, and other generative AI applications are incredibly compute intensive. They need enormous processing power.
Right.
This is driving a massive investment cycle in data center infrastructure by the hyperscalers, your Microsofts, Amazons, Googles of the world. They're spending billions.
And that spending flows down to chips.
Directly. The total semiconductor market just for data centers is projected to more than double, from maybe $209 billion in 2024 to nearly $500 billion by 2030, $500 billion just for data center chips.
Wow.
And this investment flows directly into the most advanced chips, the powerful GPUs, custom AI accelerators or ASICs, high bandwidth memory, HBM. And the manufacturing of all these leading-edge components is entirely dependent on ASML's EUV and advanced DUV lithography systems.
So ASML is basically selling the picks and shovels for the AI gold rush.
That's a perfect way to put it. It clearly positions ASML as a primary, undeniable beneficiary of the AI revolution, a truly foundational pick-and-shovel play.
And there's also growth happening just beyond the leading edge of making individual chips smaller. This area called advanced packaging, putting chips together in new ways, that seems to be another fascinating area creating new opportunities for ASML.
That's an excellent point, yes. As traditional 2D scaling, just shrinking transistors on a flat chip, gets harder and more expensive, the industry is increasingly turning to innovative techniques like 2.5D and 3D stacking.
Stacking chips on top of each other.
Essentially, yes, or placing them very close together on an intermediary layer. This integrates multiple smaller chiplets into a single powerful package, helping to overcome some of those physical limitations of a single large chip.
And this market is growing fast.
Very rapidly. The advanced packaging market is expanding quickly, with forecasts projecting a compound annual growth rate somewhere between 8.5% and 10%. It could reach a market size of over $80 billion by the early 2030s.
Where does ASML fit into packaging? I thought they just made the chips themselves.
Well, ASML plays a crucial role here because many advanced packaging techniques, like something called fan-out wafer-level packaging or FOWLP, they actually require lithography.
Lithography for packaging?
Yes, to create the very fine-pitch interconnects, the tiny wires or connections between those different chiplets on the silicon wafer or package substrate. This creates incremental demand for ASML's systems, particularly their less advanced DUV systems.
Ah, so it's not just about the most advanced EUV. Packaging needs DUV, too.
Exactly. It expands ASML's addressable market beyond just the traditional front end of line applications where the transistors are made. It gives their mature DUV technology another strong growth driver.
So with all these incredible drivers, high-NA, the AI explosion, advanced packaging, it's really no surprise that ASML's management sounds understandably bullish about the long term.
They certainly are. Management expressed very strong confidence at their 2024 Investor Day event. They laid out some ambitious long-term targets.
What kind of targets?
They're aiming for annual revenue somewhere between $44 billion and $60 billion by the year 2030.
Up from $28 billion in 2024.
So potentially doubling again.
Potentially, yes. And alongside that revenue growth, they expect gross margins to continue expanding into that 56% to 60% range we mentioned earlier. This outlook provides a really clear benchmark for the company's long-term ambitions. It demonstrates their deep understanding of these market trends and, frankly, their confidence in maintaining their technological lead. How does a company this technologically advanced and, frankly, this profitable actually manage its money? They must have a clear philosophy that not only fuels their dominance, but also, you know, rewards the people who own the company, the shareholders.
They do. Their capital allocation strategy can really be seen as a virtuous cycle. It works like this. They prioritize heavy R&D investment to maintain and extend their technological moat. That's number one.
Gotta stay ahead.
Gotta stay ahead. Then they follow up with the necessary capital expenditures, or CapEx, to support the production of these complex machines and fuel further innovation in manufacturing them. And then, crucially, they systematically return the substantial free cash flow generated by this leadership position back to shareholders.
R&D, CapEx, return cash. Sounds simple, but hard to do.
Well, a key enabler of the strategy is their relatively asset-light business model, especially compared to their customers.
Asset-light. They build huge, expensive machines.
They do, but think about it. Unlike their customers, the chip makers, the TSMCs, Intels, Samsungs, who invest tens of billions of dollars building massive fabrication plants, these giant fabs, ASML actually outsources the manufacturing of most of the components that go into their machines.
Ah, they assemble more than they manufacture from scratch.
Largely, yes. Their own capital expenditure is primarily focused on their assembly facilities, testing equipment, and their R&D centers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to build multi-billion dollar clean rooms just to make components.
Okay, that makes sense.
This results in exceptionally high capital efficiency compared to a chip maker. It frees up vast amounts of cash that can then be plowed back into R&D to keep the cycle going and also return to shareholders.
Okay, let's talk about that R&D investment. You said it's priority number one. It's not just important for ASML. It feels like the absolute cornerstone of their competitive advantage. It's where they secure their future decades out.
Without a doubt, R&D is everything for them. The company's spending in this area is substantial and it keeps growing. In 2023, ASML invested $4.0 billion in R&D. That was up from $3.3 billion in 2022.
4 billion euros.
Yeah, and that consistently represents about 15% of their total net sales. That is a significant commitment to innovation year after year. For Q2 2025, R&D costs were projected to be around $1.2 billion just for the quarter, maintaining this high rate of investment.
What are they spending that R&D money on specifically?
The vast majority of it is directed towards two main things: getting that next generation high-NA EUV platform ready for high-volume manufacturing, and secondly, continuously improving their existing EUV and DUV product portfolios. They're always trying to enhance productivity, imaging performance, reliability for their customers. It's a non-negotiable expense that underpins their entire competitive position.
Okay, so after funding that crucial R&D and the necessary CapEx, they focus on shareholder returns. For those who invest in ASML, the company has a pretty consistent track record of returning significant cash.
Yes, they do. They maintain a policy of paying a growing quarterly dividend. For the full year 2024, ASML declared a total dividend of 6.40 per ordinary share. And for Q2 2025, they announced an interim dividend of 1.60 per share just for that quarter.
A growing dividend is always nice for investors. What about buybacks?
Share repurchases are also a major component of their capital return program. In Q2 2025 alone, the company repurchased approximately 1.4 billion of its own shares under its active 2022-2025 buyback program.
1.4 billion in one quarter.
Yeah. And historically, buybacks have actually represented the largest portion of cash returned to shareholders. They accounted for something like 46% of all cash generated between 2003 and 2022. In 2023, the total capital returned to shareholders via both dividends and buybacks amounted to 3.3 billion.
So they are serious about returning cash. And all this investment, all these shareholder returns, it must be backed by a pretty rock-solid financial foundation, giving them tremendous resilience, I imagine.
It is. They maintain a very robust balance sheet. As of the end of 2024, the company's cash and cash equivalents far outweighed its total debt. This results in a strong net cash position.
Meaning they have more cash than debt.
Considerably more. This financial fortitude provides the company with enormous flexibility. It allows them to navigate industry downturns without panic, continue those aggressive R&D investments even when times are tough, and maintain their shareholder return programs without financial strain.
And that strong net cash position must give them a competitive advantage too, like being able to make big bets.
Absolutely. It's a powerful competitive advantage in itself. It enables them to confidently take on those long-term, high-risk, multi-billion-dollar R&D bets like EUV originally was, and like High-NA is now bets that potential competitors, even if they had the technical ideas, simply could not afford to make. That financial strength underpins the technological dominance.
Okay, no company, however dominant, is without risks. ASML operates in that industry known for its ups and downs. So the cyclical nature of semiconductors must be a constant factor they have to manage.
Indeed, it's inherent to the business. The semiconductor equipment industry is historically cyclical, characterized by those periods of high demand and investment followed by inevitable downturns.
What triggers those downturns usually?
Often it's driven by broader economic factors. A global economic recession, or even just a significant slowdown in key end markets like smartphones, PCs, or data centers, that leads ASML's customers, the chip makers, to pull back and reduce their capital expenditure budgets.
They stop buying machines.
Or they delay orders or cancel them. This would, in turn, negatively impact ASML's revenue and profitability. Now, while their large backlog provides that buffer against immediate impact, it doesn't grant them complete immunity, especially not to a prolonged industry downturn.
So the buffer helps, but it doesn't make them invincible to a deep recession.
Exactly. They can defer the impact, smooth it out somewhat, but they can't fully escape a deep and extended industry slump if one were to occur.
Okay. Moving on from cyclical risk, you mentioned geopolitics several times. This seems arguably the most prominent and immediate headwind facing ASML, particularly concerning China.
I would agree. It's top of mind for the company and investors. The export controls implemented by the U.S. government with Dutch compliance are stringent. They prevent ASML from selling its most advanced EUV systems and now also its top-tier DUV immersion systems into China.
And could it get worse? Could more restrictions come?
There's always the persistent risk of further tightening of these restrictions. Speculation sometimes centers on whether controls could eventually impact an even larger portion of ASML's DUV portfolio. The slightly less advanced systems, which have still been a significant source of revenue from China.
Right, because China was buying those heavily before the recent rules.
Exactly. And as we discussed, China accounted for that record 41% of system sales in 2024 due to the pull-forward effect. That stream is expected to normalize, meaning drop significantly, in 2025, creating that revenue headwind. Beyond that direct impact, there's always the background risk of Chinese government retaliation against Dutch or U.S. interests, which could potentially impact ASML indirectly.
And then there's a Taiwan risk.
Yes. Furthermore, the heavy concentration of the global semiconductor supply chain in East Asia, especially Taiwan, home to TSMC, is a major undeniable vulnerability for the entire world and certainly for ASML. Any military conflict, major natural disaster, or significant political instability in that region would have a catastrophic effect on ASML's key customers and critical suppliers. It would lead to severe disruptions across the entire technology ecosystem. It's a huge geopolitical overhang.
Okay, another risk factor seems to be ASML's own business model. It's a study in concentration, particularly with its customers. That sounds like a double-edged sword, a source of strength maybe, but also a potential vulnerability.
It absolutely is a double-edged sword. As we noted, a vast majority of ASML's revenue, especially for the high-end EUV systems, comes from just those three main customers: TSMC, Samsung, and Intel.
How is that a strength?
Well, on one hand, these deep collaborative partnerships are a core part of ASML's economic moat. They foster innovation, ensure ASML's tools meet future needs, and effectively lock out potential competitors because these customers are so deeply invested in ASML's roadmap.
Okay, but the downside?
The downside is that this dependency makes ASML highly sensitive to the specific fortunes and strategic decisions of just these few huge companies. A decision by just one of these key customers, say, to delay a major technology transition by a year or push out the construction of a big new fab that would have a material negative impact on ASML's financial results. Their fate is very closely tied to the fate of their biggest customers.
So they need all three of those giants to keep investing heavily?
Ideally, yes, or at least for the overall demand from that small group to remain strong.
All right, one more risk area. While their technological lead seems unassailable right now, Technology risk itself is kind of a perpetual factor in the semiconductor industry. Things change fast. What could possibly disrupt them technologically in the long run?
Well, first, there's always the execution risk associated with their own technology roadmap. ASML's future growth is heavily dependent on the successful execution of that next-generation High-NA EUV platform. It's incredibly complex.
What if High-NA runs into problems?
Any significant delays, major technical setbacks, or problems achieving the expected manufacturing yields with High-NA that could seriously undermine customer confidence and impact the long-term growth narrative, especially given the immense capital already being invested by chipmakers based on ASML's promises.
So they have to deliver on High-NA.
They absolutely have to deliver.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's always that long tail risk of a genuinely disruptive alternative technology emerging to challenge optical lithography altogether.
Like Canon's nano imprint.
Like Canon's NIL, or perhaps something entirely unforeseen. While, as we discussed, NIL is currently considered a low probability threat to ASML's core markets, its progress, or the emergence of any other alternative patterning technique warrants continuous monitoring. It's just a reminder that even seemingly unshakable monopolies aren't entirely immune to fundamental long-term technological shifts, however unlikely they might seem today.
Okay, let's talk about valuation. How does the market actually value a company like ASML with its unique position? Its valuation multiples, things like the PE ratio, they must tell an interesting story, often reflecting those ups and downs of the semiconductor cycle you mentioned.
They certainly do. ASML's valuation multiples have definitely fluctuated quite significantly over time. They move largely in response to shifts in the semiconductor cycle and, maybe just as importantly, evolving investor sentiment regarding the company's long-term growth prospects.
So where does it stand now? Is it considered expensive or cheap?
Well, for instance, as of August 2025, ASML's trailing 12-month price-to-earnings, or PE ratio, stood at approximately 31.5.
How does that compare historically?
Historically, that ratio has seen a very wide range. It fell to as low as 11.5 during the deep downturn back in 2012, but it peaked above 54 in mid-2024 during a period of very heightened growth expectations, maybe peak cycle enthusiasm.
So 31.5 somewhere in the middle, but maybe on the higher side.
It's definitely above its historical 10-year median PE ratio. This suggests the market is currently pricing in a fairly strong recovery from the transition year and continued robust long-term growth. Other multiples tell a similar story. The price to sales, or PS ratio, was about 8.4 as of August 2025, again having peaked significantly higher, above 14 back in 2024, and its enterprise value to EBITDA ratio.
Why use that one?
It's often preferred for capital-intensive companies because it accounts for both debt and cash on the balance sheet. That ratio was approximately 19.9. So by most metrics, it's not historically cheap right now.
Now, this is where ASML truly stands out, right? When you compare its valuation to its semiconductor equipment peers, it consistently trades at a significant premium. Why is that? What justifies paying more for ASML than for, say, Applied Materials?
Yeah, the premium is quite consistent, and it's a clear reflection of its unique competitive position. As we've discussed, when you compare ASML to companies like Applied Materials, Lam Research, KLA Corporation, those peers operate in important but much more fragmented and competitive segments, etch, deposition, process control. There's more competition.
Whereas ASML has the EUV monopoly.
Exactly. ASML, with its EUV business, holds that pure, unassailable monopoly. And in high-end DUV, it's near monopoly status. The market explicitly values this toll road business model much more highly.
The toll road analogy again.
Because any entity wishing to produce leading-edge chips must use ASML's tools. There's no alternative for the most critical steps. So the market prices ASML more like a unique piece of technology infrastructure, like a utility almost, rather than just a standard equipment manufacturer. Investors are willing to pay a premium for the perceived durability and visibility of its long-term earnings stream, which seems less susceptible to competitive pressures than its peers.
Can you see that premium clearly in the numbers?
Oh, yeah. ASML's PE ratio of around 31.5 compares to, say, Applied Materials PE of maybe 19.4, Lam Research is around 24.0. It's a noticeable gap. This premium directly reflects investor confidence in ASML's unrivaled market power and its superior long-term earnings potential.
So boiling it down, what are the core beliefs or assumptions driving ASML's relatively high valuation? And what factors could cause that valuation to shift dramatically, either up or down?
Okay, the primary drivers underpinning the valuation are, one, that monopolistic market structure, especially in EUV. Two, its critical, indispensable role in enabling those huge long-term secular growth trends like AI and advanced computing. And three, its track record of superior profitability and capital efficiency compared to peers. Those are the pillars supporting the premium.
And the sensitivities, what could knock it down?
The valuation is highly sensitive to several key factors. Firstly, those long-term growth expectations are paramount. Any perceived threat to the High-NA roadmap succeeding, or maybe a fundamental shift in the long-term demand outlook for advanced semiconductors, that would almost certainly negatively impact the valuation multiples.
So execution on High-NA is key for the valuation too.
Absolutely. Secondly, geopolitical risk is a major factor. The current valuation arguably already carries some kind of discount related to its China exposure and the general instability risk around the East Asian supply chain, especially Taiwan. An escalation of tensions could cause significant multiple contraction, whereas conversely, a genuine de-escalation could lead to multiple expansion. It's a big swing factor.
Okay.
What else?
Finally, there's the semiconductor cycle itself. We're currently assessed to be in or just coming out of a transition year. As the industry moves more firmly into a recovery phase, earnings estimates for ASML are likely to rise. That could make the current valuation look more reasonable on a forward-looking basis, even if the multiple itself doesn't change much.
Because the EMPE goes up.
Exactly. And it's also worth remembering that valuation multiples in cyclical industries are often highest near the bottom of a cycle, paradoxically, because the market is trying to look past the trough earnings towards the expected recovery peak. So for you, the listener, the key question becomes, how do you weigh the undeniable certainty of ASML's unparalleled market position and technological leadership against the inherent volatility of its end markets and those significant geopolitical headwinds? It's a complex balance, a classic growth versus risk calculation, but one with potentially powerful rewards given ASML's unique role. Behind every truly great company, there's usually great leadership. ASML seems guided by a stable, experienced management team that has successfully navigated some incredible technological challenges over the years.
That's very true. The company operates under a two-tier board structure, which is quite common in the Netherlands. You have a board of management responsible for the day-to-day operations, strategy execution, and then a separate, independent supervisory board whose role is oversight and advising the management board.
Who's on the management board now?
The current board of management is a five-member team, and it's led by President and CEO Christophe Fouquet.
Now, there was a significant leadership transition recently in 2024, right? The longtime CEO and CTO retired.
Yes, that was a major event. The retirement of Peter Wennink, the longtime CEO, and Martin van den Brink, the equally long-serving Chief Technology Officer. These two were truly the architects of the company's extremely risky, multi-decade bet on EUV technology that ultimately paid off so spectacularly. Their vision shaped the company.
Big shoes to fill. Who is the new CEO, Christophe Fouquet?
He's not an outsider. Christophe Fouquet is a longtime ASML executive. Critically, he previously ran the crucial EUV business division within ASML, so he knows the core technology and the market intimately.
So continuity, but maybe a shift in focus.
Possibly. This transition arguably marks a strategic shift in focus for the company, perhaps moving from the highly visionary phase of inventing and commercializing EUV against all odds to a new phase centered more on operational execution, scaling the technology efficiently, managing the complexity, and navigating that increasingly difficult global geopolitical landscape.
And the track record of the management team overall.
It's exceptional. You just have to look at the successful development and market adoption of EUV lithography, a feat, as we said, many in the industry genuinely thought was impossible just 10 or 15 years ago. Their capital allocation has also been very prudent, consistently balancing that aggressive R&D investment needed to stay ahead with substantial and growing capital returns to shareholders.
Oh, okay. Strong leadership needs strong governance, especially for a company this critical on a global scale. How does ASML ensure transparency and accountability?
They seem to adhere to high standards of corporate governance. They comply fully with the requirements of Dutch corporate law and also the rules of the exchanges where they are listed, primarily the Euronext Amsterdam and the NASDAQ in the US.
Do they communicate well with investors?
They maintain a high degree of transparency, generally speaking. They provide very detailed financial results quarterly, comprehensive annual reports, and strategic updates during their regular Investor Day events. They also publish extensive documentation online regarding their governance policies, things like their code of conduct, remuneration policies for executives, policies on shareholder engagement. It's all out there.
And are they considered shareholder-friendly in their actions?
I'd say yes. Their policies, like the consistent and growing dividend, coupled with that significant share repurchase program we discussed, demonstrate a strong alignment with shareholder interests and a clear commitment to returning excess capital when appropriate. This robust governance structure and these clear shareholder-friendly policies, they work together to reinforce confidence in the company's long-term stability and its decision-making processes, which is crucial, really, given the strategic importance and the sheer complexity of their business. Hashtag outro.
So wrapping this up, what do we really learn from this deep dive into ASML? We've seen a company that is just absolutely indispensable to modern technology. It holds an unparalleled monopoly in its most critical segment, that's EUV lithography. Their technological fortress, built over decades of high-risk R&D, is truly a marvel of engineering and, frankly, strategic foresight.
Yeah, and to connect this to the bigger picture, it's really a testament to the power of patient, long-term, high-risk R&D. It shows how that kind of commitment can create truly formidable economic moats that competitors simply cannot replicate, no matter how much money they might throw at it today. Their financial performance, as we saw, is absolutely top tier, and it's fueled by these powerful secular tailwinds like AI and advanced packaging. Even as they navigate these significant geopolitical storms and the inherent cyclicality of their industry, they represent a unique and utterly essential component of the global technology infrastructure.
And this isn't just the story about one company, is it? It's really a window into the foundational technology that enables literally every digital innovation we all rely on, from the simplest app on your phone to the most complex AI model running in the cloud. Understanding ASML, in a way, means understanding the very bedrock of our increasingly connected AI-driven world.
So maybe this leaves us with an important final question for you, the listener, to think about. In a world that's increasingly focused on the intangible, on data, software, AI models, ASML serves as a powerful reminder that the physical infrastructure, the complex hardware, the picks and shovels that make all those digital dreams possible, that infrastructure remains the ultimate choke point.
Right.
So as nations increasingly compete for technological supremacy, will the mounting geopolitical pressures on this single, uniquely vital company become its greatest challenge? Or perhaps will its inherent indispensability ultimately force a new, maybe reluctant era of global cooperation simply because progress depends so heavily on them?
A fascinating question. Something to ponder, maybe, the next time you look at your smartphone today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.